You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
A report commissioned by the Human Rights Foundation found the New Zealand SIS has been engaging in immoral and possibly illegal interviewing practices of Muslims. Interviews are being disguised as informal chats, with serious allegations then being put to the interviewee after they are made comfortable. This can have devastating effects on their relationship with the community and pressure them into revealing information. I spoke with Peter Hosking from the Human Rights Foundation about the report, first asking him about its main findings.
We found that a number of practices of the SIS breached both ethical and legal considerations. And hence, our main role in this has been to try and ensure that the Muslim community was aware of its rights. We're not any sort of enforcement agency. All we can do is to assist people to be aware of their rights, so we've produced a resource for them setting out what the responsibilities of intelligence officers are in the sorts of circumstances that came out in our research.
And what were these circumstances?
Well, this was often interviews were being carried out. People were being invited to a quiet coffee, and an interview would take place. Well, a discussion would take place. It was an interview, although it was never characterized as that by the intelligence service. And people said that it seemed to be just a quiet chat with a generalized topics, and then right at the very end, they would have something extremely serious put to them, such as a comment that had been made in a Facebook page or something really particular, and the people who were being interviewed suddenly realised that although they'd gone into the interview situation with an open mind but we're trying to be transparent and in fact that they have a clear conscience, they suddenly found that they were under close scrutiny and were concerned about this. And after we'd looked into it, it seemed that many of these practices were unethical at the best.
Does the SAS have the responsibility, like the police, to tell someone if they are being interviewed? Can they get them in under false pretenses?
Yeah, we think they do. They had a practice that they called undeclared interviews. Declared interviews and undeclared interviews. And so what we're talking about here are, I think, what they would characterise as an undeclared interview. This has been taken up subsequently by the Inspector General of Intelligence and Security, which is the independent oversight authority for the intelligence services, who I think agrees with our view about this, that people have rights that in relation to interviews of this kind, and in particular they have the right to say that they don't want to, that they want to remain silent, that they don't want to be interviewed, and that they don't want to be contacted further.
And in these interviews, did the interviewees feel pressure to give up information?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The pressure came in a number of different ways and resulted in their feeling that they may be betraying their community. For example, they felt extremely uncomfortable about being singled out, and a certain different interviewees experienced it in different ways. But one was that to feel quite alienated, which frankly is the last thing that the authority should be doing in relation to young men like this. The danger comes from alienation. So conducting interviews in a way that ends up with people feeling alienated is frankly completely counterproductive.
Because does this sort of drive a wedge between them and their community if the community sees them talking to the SAS?
Of course. And that's one of the reasons why, realising that they wished to disengage, but some weren't sure how to do that or whether they even had a right to do so. And that was one of the issues covered in the brief pamphlet that we produced to make it clear that it's security services are not an enforcement agency. They don't have any power to arrest or detain. This was made available to ensure that that people knew what their rights were and could stand up for them in this sort of situation.
And what do you think this says about the SAS and the culture within the SAS, especially considering the sort of lack of monitoring of white supremacist threats?
Well, you know, I don't have an insight into exactly how much the SAS was monitoring the far right. I have to say that this pamphlet was produced with some cooperation from the SIS, because following the research that we undertook, we did some work with a number of government agencies, including the SIS, New Zealand Customs, Immigration. These are the organisations that the community said were the ones that were making them feel outcasts and feeling alienated. And the SIS attended a number of those meetings and, you know, had the opportunity to actually contribute to the pamphlets and the information cards that we were producing. So, you know, I think I wouldn't want to say that the SIS hasn't learned from that experience and the information that we provided.
Do you think we will see fewer interviews like this from now on?
So I have to say that once those roundtables that I discussed with the agencies began, we did get some initial feedback that at the airport things were improving. And then later there was another couple of anecdotal comments that perhaps things were sliding again. But that was in relation to New Zealand Customs and what was happening at the airport, which was part of the inquiry, research that we did. It didn't directly relate to the SIS, so I can't really comment on whether that part of the research is still carrying on.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.